Then she felt the mesh of burlap striking the skin of her shoulders. She found herself lying on the broken sandbags. She saw the long, tight gleam of her stockings. She felt his mouth pressed to her ankle, then rising in a tortured motion up the line of her leg, as if he wished to own its shape by means of his lips. Then she felt her teeth sinking into the flesh of his arm. She felt the sweep of his elbow knocking her head aside and his mouth seizing her lips with a pressure more viciously painful than hers. Then she felt when it hit her throat, that which she knew only as an upward streak of motion that released and united her body into a single shock of pleasure. Then she knew nothing but the motion of his body, and the driving greed that went reaching on and on as if she were not a person any longer, only a sensation of endless reaching for the impossible. Then she knew that it was possible, and she gasped and lay still, knowing that nothing more could be desired. Ever. He lay beside her on his back, looking up at the darkness of the granite vault above them. She saw him stretched on the jagged slant of sandbags, as if his body were fluid in relaxation. She saw the black wedge of her cape flung across the rails at their feet. There were beads of moisture twinkling on the vault, shifting slowly, running into invisible cracks like the lights of a distant traffic. When he spoke, his voice sounded as if he were quietly continuing a sentence in answer to the question in her mind, as if he had nothing to hide from her any longer, and what he owed her now was only the act of undressing his soul, as simply as he would have undressed his body. "This is how I've watched you for 10 years. From here, from under the ground, under your feet, knowing every move you made in your office at the top of the building, but never seeing you, never enough. 10 years of nights spent waiting to catch a glimpse of you here on the platforms when you boarded a train. Whenever the order came down to couple your car, I'd know of it, and wait, and see you come down the ramp and wish you didn't walk so fast. It was so much like you, that walk. I'd know it anywhere. Your walk, and those legs of yours. It was always your legs that I'd see first, hurrying down the ramp, going past me as I looked up at you from a dark sidetrack below. I think I could have molded a sculpture of your legs. I knew them, not with my eyes, but with the palms of my hands when I watched you go by. When I turned back to my work, when I went home just before sunrise for the 3 hours of sleep, which I didn't get. I love you, she said, her voice quiet and almost toneless, except for a fragile sound of youth. He closed his eyes as if letting the sound travel through the years behind them. 10 years, Dagny. Except that once. There were a few weeks when I had you before me in plain sight, within reach. Not hurrying away, but held still as on a lighted stage, a private stage for me to watch, and I watched you for hours through many evenings, in the lighted window of an office that was called the John Galt Line. And one night, her breath was a faint gasp. Was it you, that night? Did you see me? I saw your shadow on the pavement, pacing back and forth. It looked like a struggle. It looked like... She stopped. She did not want to say torture. It was, he said quietly. That night, I wanted to walk in, to face you, to speak, to... That was the night I came closest to breaking my oath. When I saw you slumped across your desk, when I saw you broken by the burden you were carrying. John, that night, it was you that I was thinking of. Only I didn't know it. But you see, I knew it. It was you all my life, through everything I did and everything I wanted. I know it. John, the hardest was not when I left you in the valley. It was... Your radio speech. The day you returned? Yes. Were you listening? Of course. I'm glad you did it. It was a magnificent thing to do. And I knew it anyway. You knew? About Hank Reardon? Before I saw you in the valley. Was it? When you learned about him, had you expected it?
No.
Was it? She stopped.
Hard?
Yes. But only for the first few days. That next night. Do you want me to tell you what I did the night after I learned it?
Yes.
I had never seen Hank Reardon. Only pictures of him in the newspapers. I knew that he was in New York that night at some conference of big industrialists. I wanted to have just one look at him. I went to wait at the entrance of the hotel where that conference was held. There were bright lights under the marquee of the entrance, but it was dark beyond on the pavement, so I could see without being seen. There were a few loafers and vagrants hanging around. There was a drizzle of rain, and we clung to the walls of the building. One could tell the members of the conference when they began filing out by their clothes and their manner. Ostentatiously prosperous clothes, and a manner of overbearing timidity, as if they were guiltily trying to pretend that they were what they appeared to be for that moment. There were chauffeurs driving up their cars. There were a few reporters delaying them for questions, and hangers-on trying to catch a word from them. They were worn men, those industrialists, aging, flabby, frantic with the effort to disguise uncertainty. And then I saw him. He wore an expensive trench coat and a hat slanting across his eyes. He walked swiftly with the kind of assurance that has to be earned, as he'd earned it. Some of his fellow industrialists pounced on him with questions, and those tycoons were acting like hangers-on around him. I caught a glimpse of him as he stood with his hand on the door of his car, his head lifted. I saw the brief flare of a smile under the slanting brim, a confident smile, impatient and a little amused. And then for one instant, I did what I'd never done before, what most men wreck their lives on doing. I saw that moment out of context. I saw the world as he made it look, as if it matched him, as if he were its symbol. I saw a world of achievement, of unenslaved energy, of unobstructed drive through purposeful years to the enjoyment of one's reward. I saw, as I stood in the rain in a crowd of vagrants, what my years would have brought me if that world had existed, and I felt a desperate longing. He was the image of everything I should have been, and he had everything that should have been mine. But it was only a moment. Then I saw the scene in full context again, and in all of its actual meaning. I saw what price he was paying for his brilliant ability, what torture he was enduring in silent bewilderment, struggling to understand what I had understood. I saw that the world he suggested did not exist and was yet to be made. I saw him again for what he was, the symbol of my battle, the unrewarded hero whom I was to avenge and to release. And then I accepted what I'd learned about you and him. I saw that it changed nothing, that I should have expected it, that it was right. He heard the faint sound of her moan, and he chuckled softly. Dagny, it's not that I don't suffer. It's that I know the unimportance of suffering. I know that pain is to be fought and thrown aside, not to be accepted as part of one's soul and as a permanent scar across one's view of existence. Don't feel sorry for me. It was gone right then. She turned her head to look at him in silence, and he smiled, lifting himself on an elbow to look down at her face as she lay helplessly still. She whispered, "You've been a track laborer here. Here. For 12 years.
Yes.
Ever since?
Ever since I quit the 20th century.
The night when you saw me for the first time. You were working here then?
Yes. And the morning when you offered to work for me as my cook, I was only your track laborer on leave of absence. Do you see why I laughed as I did?
She was looking up at his face. Hers was a smile of pain. His, of pure gaiety. John,
say it, but say it all.
You were here. All those years.
Yes.
All those years. While the railroad was perishing, while I was searching for men of intelligence, while I was struggling to hold on to any scrap of it I could find,
while you were combing the country for the inventor of my motor, while you were feeding James Taggart and Wesley Mooch, while you were naming your best achievement after the enemy whom you wanted to destroy.
She closed her eyes.